right, you're listening to the first episode of the season of the Road to Nashville podcast. We're recording at Bridgestone Arena, and yes, that is Justin Bieber Christmas music in the background you're hearing.
It could be worse.
You know what? It's the second time it's played, it's kind of growing on me
already.
It's
a decent album.
I hate to say that. It's pretty catchy. It's really smooth and soothing.
I hate to be the 41-year-old guy to tell you the Justin Bieber Christmas album is awesome, but it is. Sorry.
Robbie Stanley's nodding his head along too, so I think he approves as well.
And he is the definition of cool. So if he if he accepts it, you should.
I'm your host, Michael Gallagher. Cranberry Cutler, as Joe Rexroad has called him, is not here. He decided to start Christmas vacation early. He booked it out of town on Thursday, so sitting in for him is Jeremy Kegover of the Nashville Predators Radio Network. A lot of cool stuff to talk about. We're going to kick it off, though. David Poile was inducted to the USA Hockey Hall of Fame. Gover, you were there. Talk about what kind of ceremony it was, and how cool is it to see someone you know personally honored like that?
It was really great to have covered him and his team for 10 years now, officially, under media responsibilities, and then about 2 years before that with 303, uncredentialed. It was just really, it was such an honor to be a part of it, and then even just be in the room, obviously. Only 550 people got to say that they're in the room, right? When David Poile and Paul Stewart and Red Berenson and Ali Darwitz, et cetera, went into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. And not only was I one of the 550 people that got to do that, gets to say that, but Ryan Porth of 102.5 The Game invited me to be the co-host on their special Preds Insiders hour leading up to the induction ceremony. And so I got to be a small part of it, too. And I think it was just a great honor. And it's really cool to see somebody of that ilk, like David Poile, as respected as he is, go into a place like that and have the honor he does. And to have it be a who's who of hockey. They're there for everybody else, too, but you can tell that there's a lot of the league's GMs made the trip out here to Nashville just to honor David Poile and his accomplishments. I thought that was a really telling fact about the evening.
I thought what was really cool about his speech and just listen to the interviews leading up to that was he talked about, yeah, he's been a really big part of the hockey landscape, but he talked about what hockey's done for him throughout his career. And it's not, I don't know him as well as you guys do. I've only covered, this is my fourth or fifth year covering the Preds, but seeing someone that we interact with on a somewhat regular basis, seeing him talk about a sport that he loves so much is great, knowing how much hockey has grown in this city and David Poile's at the forefront of all that.
Yeah, and I think that's just it too, right? Like he understands that, he understands that the sport and the game of hockey and even the city of Nashville have afforded him so many opportunities, and I think it's very David Poile like to be up there and talk about those things just saying that the game has given him so much and that kind of thing. So it was just really great to be a part of that, even if it was a small part of that, and be in the room for that honor. And of course, it was like I said, it was perfect to see him and his acceptance speech talk about his Washington Capitals job and his Atlanta Flames job, and of course, ultimately the Nashville Predators job. And to be a part of that was really, really, it was an honor. I mean, I keep saying the word honor, but that's really what it was. I left that night thinking, I don't care how late it is, I don't care how late that ceremony went. It was awesome, and it was just an honor to be a part of it.
And we do have some actual prospect stuff to get into. I just figured it was nice to talk about that, because that's stuff that most people, most of our fans, our listeners, don't get to see on a regular basis. And
well, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, yeah. Right? I mean, like, this is a thing, like, okay, so if, let's just say, David Poile moves on, I don't know, 5 years from now, and then the Predators get another general manager. What are the odds that he would then be inducted into either the Canadian or the American Hall of Fame, let alone in Nashville? It's almost infinitely impossible, right? So it's just a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the city of Nashville to host something like that and to honor one of its own.
And it's also one of those things as journalists, whenever we're younger, we're starting out, this is one of those events that we hope we can cover sometime throughout the course of our career, something as cool as this, because we start off, we're journalists, but we're also fans of the sport as well.
Yeah, I mean, I love the sport of hockey. This is what I grew up wanting to do, was cover the sport of hockey, because I knew I wasn't good enough to play it at a competitive level. So I play it at an adult rec league level, and I love every second of that. But to be able to be a part of the Predators fabric, even if it is a small thread at the edge of the tapestry for the last 10 years, has been really, really great.
So kicking off all the prospect stuff we got to talk about, we're almost about, quarter of the way through the season so far. I feel like there's been so much that we kind of haven't got to talk about, so much that's going on. One thing that was cool was we got to actually catch up with Milwaukee Admirals defenseman Alex Carrier. Got a little bit of a one-on-one interview with him after practice. Shout out to Charlie with the Admirals for setting that up. But here's what Alex Carrier had to say. It was about a four-minute interview. We'll let you listen to that, and then we'll discuss it off air. All right, we are joined by Admirals defenseman Alex Carrier. Alex, jumping right into this, Dean Evason heads to Minnesota, enter in Carl Taylor. Have you guys had any tough adjustments breaking in a new coach, and how smooth has that process been for you guys?
For sure, having a new coaching staff, so we have a lot of new faces as well in the locker room. I think it was an adjustment for everyone, but we've been together since we're in Nashville, so I think the chemistry is pretty strong right now. We have a great group of guys, great group of coaches, and we showed that in the beginning of the season, and hopefully we can keep going.
With Dean Evason leaving, in addition to having the new coach, Scott Nickel comes in and he's the new GM as well. How has the team handled this time of transition?
Like I said, we've been together for a while since the change up in Nashville. We also started the season on the road, so that was good for the chemistry. And just having great people in the locker room makes it way easier, and especially winning hockey games. For sure, you're even closer when you're winning instead of losing. So I don't think it was a big adjustment. I think it was just part of the process.
At the beginning of the season, Jack Doherty gets traded away. It kind of leaves you as the veteran among the defense group. Do you like that role, knowing that the team is relying heavily on you this year to try to get back into the playoffs?
Oh, yeah. I think we have a good deep core. We have Youngers and then older guys like Donovan and Kennardy that's been in the league for over close to 10 years almost. So I think those guys with us, like me and Nesca Dialard, as well as Barroska and Lucinen. I think we have a good mix. We moved the puck well, and it's a big responsibility for us to play minutes, but it's really cool to be doing that and then to get some wins. And like I said, hopefully we can keep going that way and having fun and winning games.
And just kind of wrapping up here, you guys got out to a really hot start. Your first 8 to 10 games, you're still sitting at the top of the Central Division. You're third overall in the league in points. Do you feel like this team is kind of playing with a chip on its shoulder, essentially, to try to get back to being that perennial playoff contender after you guys missed the playoffs last year?
I think so. I think last year was really disappointing for our group. So we came back this year with the guys that was with us last year, having the mentality to the winning mentality like Nashville does, and I think it reflects on how we're playing right now, how we're practicing as well. So yeah, we definitely did have a chip on our shoulder at the beginning of the season, but with, like I said, a lot of new faces and coaching staff, it's a way different year, so we got to do a fresh start and everything's going well right now.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Alex. We really appreciate you taking the time to join us, and good luck the rest of the season. All right. So that was our interview with Alex Carrier, and some things that he pointed out. There's two things that really stood out in my mind that I want to talk about. The first thing was he said the chemistry is strong. If you look at the Admirals, if you in the standings right now, they're at the top. They're leading their division, and they're also their second in the AHL in penalty kill at 87.3%, right behind the Providence Bruins. Two of their top three scorers are defensemen, and three of their top 10 scorers are defensemen. Their top two leading scorers are Matt Donovan and Frederick Allard. Matt Donovan just came out of nowhere, 9 goals, 18 points. Allard, he's got 15 assists. Carey himself, he's got 10 points, 2 goals, 8 assists. I think, I don't know if he was being specific as to the team chemistry or the defensive chemistry. We weren't really clear on that, but the defense is playing really, really well. And the fact, I didn't even realize until I saw it tweeted out earlier, that they're second in the AHL in penalty kill. That just kind of surprised me. Not saying that they have bad defense, but that just kind of, I didn't really notice that.
Well, plus it's an impressive stat anyway, right? I mean, just the fact that there's if your team, regardless of what the talent you have on the roster is, if your team is the top, I don't know, 5 in penalty kill of any league, that's going to be, I mean, that's pretty impressive considering the context. For me, the most impressive to me is, I mean, yes, okay, Rocco Grimaldi is the leading scorer, you know, the Milwaukee Admirals before he leaves. But what we have here is Matt Donovan and Frederick Allard, who you both mentioned, they are two of the top three scorers for the Milwaukee Admirals. So the tough thing for me is here's two defensemen, two of which aren't necessarily, you would not in preseason have been like, hey, those two guys are going to tear it up offensively. And here they are leading the team in scoring for the most part, short of Anthony Richard, of course. So to me, that's more impressive than anything else. And then, of course, the Alex Carrier, 10 points in 29 games. I'd like to see more out of him. But again, if he's just being a pro and learning as he goes, then that's all he can do. Because again, look at the Nashville Predators top, I guess, seven, right? So they're not going anywhere. The Erwin Boteto and Yannick Weber, they are three guys that will be, well, at least a couple of them, if not all of them, will be gone next season. So their contracts end this season. That's maybe an opportunity for Carrier or for Donovan at this point, because he's really impressed. Yeah. Earned himself an initial contract, for crying out loud.
And he's only 28, so he's still young enough he can make a difference, but he's not too old to where he's just a role player for Milwaukee.
But he's old enough to be experienced, right?
Exactly.
So to me, he really stands out, not just because he leads the team in scoring, but because of he kind of came out of nowhere, and he's really leading this team right now.
And if you look next year, if Boteto and Weber and Erwin are all gone, he could step in and fill that bottom pairing defensive role,
yes,
as someone who he's still a little bit young, but he's still experienced enough to know what he's doing back there. And you look at some of the other defensemen. One guy that I'm really high on that we saw in development camp and rookie camp is Filip Peracta. He really impressed me. They sent him down a little bit early, but I still like what I saw from him. And then I've just liked this guy ever since I talked to Lavender about him. But Jonas Luttinen, he's impressed me as well. And you look at them. You got Peracta, Luttinen, Matt Donovan, Tenorti, and you got Alex Carrier and Frederick Allard kind of leading the charge as these young defensemen that are kind of like the next wave. I mean, I look at someone like Frederick Allard. He to me, he's someone who could, worst case scenario, could be someone like Kevin Klein was for this team, where he can slot in on the first line if you need him to. He's more of a second, third pairing defenseman, but he's not going to get you beat a lot. He's very good stay at home. And I think we're all at this point just waiting for, when is Alex Carrier going to have that breakthrough? When is he going to come up to the NHL level and stick for good? And I think from listening to him talk about how the team's gelling and the chemistry and all the stuff he's learning from their new head coach, Carl Taylor, I think this is the year he puts it all together. And I think maybe at the end of this year, beginning of next year, he comes up and he finally sticks.
I think next year is the opportunity for him to do that. Short of Dante Fabbro signing after his Boston University season is over.
The elephant in the room.
The elephant in the room. Short of him signing and then basically impressing enough to join the top six, or I guess top seven, but I guess you wouldn't want him not playing. So top six, I agree. I think next year is the opportunity for the Predators to have a chance to have somebody else come into the defensive core, because right now it's pretty much set. Even with an injury, it's pretty much set. So, but again, does Donovan do that? Does Allard do that? I mean, Allard has really earned his keep.
He's really coming on strong this season.
Yeah, and I want to talk about Luttinen real quick. He's a fifth-round pick of the Predators back in 2014. So this guy's been a project from the beginning. But
kind of reminds me of Matthias Ekholm. I mean, Barry Trotz wasn't very high on him, and he ended up coming up, and he finally stuck.
Yeah, and so to me, he's a guy to keep an eye on for the future. But I think he's more of a I don't want to say shutdown defenseman, but he's more of a, I guess you have to call him that, because he doesn't put up a whole lot of points. He's super solid, though. But
kind of like a prototypical defenseman.
Yeah, prototypical. Yeah. When will he get his opportunity, if ever? That's the thing. Because, again, this is not this is not the Florida Panthers, right? I mean, this is a team that has their defense set for the foreseeable future. When can a guy like that break in? When he's under Matt Donovan, Frederick Allard, we talked about Carrier, of course. That's the real question.
And it's a good problem to have, because looking at their pipeline overall, it's not very strong. Outside of Tolvanen and Fabbro, the drop-off is significant. You look at Emil Petrushan, that's the proper way to say it.
That's the proper way to say it. Don't let anybody tell you any different.
But outside of Emil Petrushan, I mean, maybe if Trennan gets it together, but that guy, he's just so wacky, you can't trust him. The prospects aren't very good outside of the top two. So maybe having all these defensemen have breakout seasons, so to speak, this could be what the Predators need. Maybe if they have strong defensemen they feel confident with next year, they can finally get some of those offensive guys coming in through the draft.
Or I'll take it one step further. If you've got guys like Matt Donovan, Frederick Allard, and Carrier, if these guys start having breakout seasons, Fabro's stock maybe goes up, depending on the season he has at BU. If those things happen, then maybe if you're Poile, you strike while the iron's hot and you trade for a forward asset, or you trade for another defenseman project that you know is going to be good, but it's going to take some time. Because again, no rush in this organization if you're a defenseman. But at the same time, guys who have paid their dues, like Allard, like Carrier, right, like Trennan for that matter, those not defensemen, right? Luttinen is another great example. eventually they're going to grow tired of waiting, right? The patience is going to go away at some point, and you just don't want that to happen on your watch. So there's a lot of benefits if the Predators can strike while the iron's hot, whether that means drafted, you know, they can worry about drafting forwards, or they can trade for a forward prospect as well.
And call me crazy. I mean, I'm very high on this guy just because I watched him at development camp. But Hardy Hammond-Actil, I feel like outside of Dante Fabbro, out of everyone in their defensive pipeline, he could be the best prospect out of all of them. But because he's playing overseas and no one really knows who he is or where he is, and there's very little tape or video or anything on him, but watching
or
him
photos
play,
for that matter.
Yeah,
try Googling it. You'll get like 3 photos. That's it.
Or you could email me. I have a bunch
of
them.
Well, right.
But just watching him at development camp, he's 6'4", 6'5", somewhere in that area. He's got a big body. He can lay a big hit. He's got a heavy shot, too. So I think if Hardy Hammond-Actil comes on in the next year or two, I mean, you could be looking at Fabbro, Carrier, Allard, Hardy Hammond-Actil. I mean, there's 4 really good, solid defensive prospects right there.
But the thing that all 4 of them have in common is they're all NHL projects, right? So they're nobody is, like, the blue chip value of, like, well, when they can get him into the lineup, he's going to come in and just wreck this place. Like, that, you don't have that type of prospects. But at the same time, you need
those.
Because
they traded him away for Kyle Turris.
Sure, sure. But you need those steady guys, though, that can plug holes when you need to and eventually grow into a full-time roster spot. Anthony Boteto's done that. I mean, he's a full-time roster spot now, but a full-time NHL roster spot. He's been on the NHL roster solid. But that's a guy, if you forget, that went. He played with the Cincinnati Cyclones for basically a half a year and kind of meddled around and didn't really know what, you know, where what his future was like. And now he's been with the NHL team for, you know, over 2 years. So for me, again, I'm not saying the dream is to be the perma-scratch defenseman. I'm not saying that. But I am saying, though, that if you're patient enough and you put in the time and you're just solid, you don't have to be a blue-chip prospect, you're just solid, you can find time at some point.
The other thing from that Alex Carrier interview that kind of stuck out to me was he said last year was a disappointment. Their mentality this year is to get back to winning. We already pointed out they're tied first in the Central with the Iowa Wild. They're 15-9-4, 34 points. You look at Milwaukee, last year they missed the playoffs. And before that, they had a run of making the playoffs in 14 out of 15 seasons.
Yes.
They won 5 division titles, including a Calder Cup in 2003-04. I think in getting Carl Taylor to come in, having the success he had with the Stars, getting him with a winning mentality, and then not saying that Dean Evason was doing a bad job by any means, but they were just, this team was ravaged last year with trading away players and roster spots, having to like sign people from the Cincinnati Cyclones to come up and just fill a roster spot for 5 or 6 games because people were hurt. I think they're heading in the right direction now. They're, you know, like I said, we're a quarter of the way through the season. They're still in first place. And I think this is a year, you know, I'm not saying they're going to win the Calder Cup or anything, but they'll get back to the playoffs and they'll get that winning mentality back. They'll get their swagger back, basically, is what I think is going to happen this year.
Yeah, but the solution here is last year they missed the playoffs, but Anders Lindback was the goaltender.
Yeah.
That's not his fault. I'm not saying that.
And he played really well for
the
situation he was in.
Right, that's my point. He played extremely, extremely well. But as Aaron Sims, the Milwaukee Admirals play-by-play man, told us, is that he just felt like Anders was exhausted because they played him so much, right? And so here, now they've got McCollum who's doing okay. You know, 904 save percentage isn't exactly great, but the 2.65 goals against average is solid. I mean, that's what you want as your backup goaltender. Troy Grosnick, of course, a 2.44 goals against average, a much better time, 20 save percentage. But my point is, they have a tandem of guys in the net between the pipes that can sustain success throughout the whole and highs and lows through the whole season, and then when they get to the playoffs, there's not one guy that's been counted on and is just taxed, right, and is just done.
And what stands out is they both played 15 games apiece, so
right.
they're not riding one like they were Anders last year, started pretty much every single game.
Right, exactly my point. So Grosnick comes up, he gets a cup of coffee at the NHL level, doesn't see any minutes, but you know he backs up Saros when Rene was hurt for a couple weeks. That's where McCollum's the bulk of his starts comes from. But when I have AHL TVs, I've seen him all season long, and he looks good. I mean, he looks fine. Now, is he an NHL goaltender? It's arguable, probably not. But for the AHL level, when you have Grosnick, a guy who could probably back up the NHL level, and then you have McCollum, who's more suited for AHL starting duties, you've got two guys that can just kind of weather the storm throughout the whole season and just kind of relieve each other so you don't have such a stamina blowout at the end, you know, come April when the push is really on to make the playoffs. You don't have that situation like they did last year.
And if, heaven forbid, anything happens to either of those two goalies, one gets injured or one gets fatigued or whatever, you still have Miroslav Svoboda who can come up and fill in, who's playing in, where is he, Cincinnati?
Atlanta.
Atlanta, yeah. he came up and he backed up Saros for a game with what was going on there. But Svoboda, he really impressed in development camp and in training camp too. He's younger, but he's someone, you know, say Grosnick gets, you know, fatigued and he ends up having to miss a playoff series or something. He's someone who can either come up and start or back up at the AHL level.
And he is the starter in Atlanta, by the way.
Yeah.
He's played 14 games. The other guys have played 5 and 6. He's got a 9-10 save percentage, which honestly for the ECHL is not
pretty
terrible.
Yeah, pretty decent.
His 5-6-0 record, you probably would like that to see that a little bit better. But again, he's on a team of basically no scorers. So he's keeping him in games as best he can based on the score sheet. And you're right, Svoboda, they like this kid. He made that ridiculous save in training camp that I put on. I put a video on Twitter. If you haven't seen it, go to Govertime, search on Twitter at Govertime and then Svoboda, Svoboda, and you'll be amazed. It's pretty ridiculous. Now, I'm not judging this guy's career potential based on a save, but I'm just saying obviously the talent is there,
yeah.
And he is getting the work in Atlanta, which is basically the only place he can really get work right now. Milwaukee doesn't have a spot, so. You know, he's doing what he can.
And let's be honest, the Milwaukee goaltending situation, it's kind of in a lame duck situation, at least for another year or two until Tomas Vomáčka gets there, because he is obviously the goaltender of the future. Juuse is going to take over at the NHL level at some point. But Vomáčka is far and away, from a talent perspective, he is their best goaltending prospect. Now, Kirill Vejmelka over in Russia is putting up some really good numbers. He's having a fantastic season. Konstantin Volkov is having a good season as well. They have potential, but this job is Vomáčka's for the taking in a year or two whenever he decides to leave UConn and sign.
Yeah, Vomáčka is at UConn right now. His first college season. He's been over North America for 3 years, so don't think he's from overseas. He's, you know, there's no issue there. He wants to be in North America. He wants to play here. He's 2-4-0 for UConn, but the UConn Huskies aren't that good. And the starter Adam Hushka is 3-7-1. So.
A lot of his time is coming into mop-up duty when they're down by some goals and the team's already, you know, they're down 5-1, so he's probably going to be facing another, you know, 30 shots just because they're not very good, like you said.
And again, you can't always look at a goaltender. This has been a pet peeve of mine. Fans that and media, for that matter, that look at a win-loss record of a goaltender and judge them based on that, that's a bunch of garbage because you've got a 2-4-0 record, and that's fine, but that doesn't tell the whole story. His goals against is 289 for UConn, which for the NCAA is pretty great. So, again, and you got to keep in mind, it's his first season at the NCAA level. He played the USHL last year, and he played the NAHL for the Corpus Christi Ice Rays the year before that. So there's been some kind of chaos in his life as far as settling down and playing somewhere, but he's with UConn at least for the next 2 years or so. So you got to think the job is his eventually.
That huffing and puffing you hear is Christopher Martel, Fox Sports South over there. He's not very happy we're invading his space.
Nothing ruins a podcast like Martel coughing into the.
Recording and a press box for recording an
interview. But he does have a new book out, so go buy it. I heard it's pretty good from people that can't read, so go buy it.
Those illiterate people really understand pictures.
but back to what we were talking about. Ellie Tolvanen got sent back down to Milwaukee. I want to get your thoughts on his four game stint up here and kind of give him a grade for what he's shown since the last time we saw him up here at the end of the season.
I still don't think he's ready. I think he's got about, I don't know, a couple months to maybe a full season of AHL action before he's ready for a full time roster spot. But that being said, the goal he scored was gorgeous, and it was an opportune play, right? I mean, he knew where to be on the ice when there was a turnover. And Craig Smith found the puck. So, for me, Tolvanen needs some work, but it's not a lot. It's not a point where you're like, "Oh, is this guy ever going to pan out?" If you remember Gallagher, there was a point of Kevin Fiala's AHL career that people thought that, like, yes. "Oh, is he actually going to pan out?" And I don't see that out of Tolvanen, let alone the fact that he's 19 years old and he's made the mature decision to stay in Milwaukee. And that's
he even pointed out that's the best thing for his development as opposed to going back to the KHL, and he knows that.
Right, and it's not just lip service, right? Like I mean, the fact that he's still in Milwaukee, still playing at the AHL level, when he could go to the KHL per his contract with the Predators last year, when he signed his entry-level contract, he could go back to the KHL if he waited 10 games, the AHL, and he was still in the AHL, he had the decision to go back overseas, and he chose not to. He knows, like Gallagher said, that it's the best path to the NHL is to stay in North America, and he's showing great maturity for his age. He just needs to bulk up. He needs to be bigger. He needs to be stronger on the puck. Now, don't get me wrong. He is not afraid to go in the dirty areas. He's not afraid to bang bodies, all that. But he's just not physically, his stature isn't big enough yet to overcome that, and that's why the NHL is just too big for him right now, aside from spot duty if they need somebody.
And I think the big thing is, you know, we touched on it, is he knows that this is best for his development. He could go over and play against other professional hockey players in the KHL, but he knows the best thing is to stay over in North America, stay playing on a North American-sized ice rink, because that's where all of his playing time is going to come from in the NHL. And he knows that that's where he needs to be. And it shows that he's dedicated to making it to the NHL, something Kevin Fiala demonstrated, but it took him 2 years to do that after the whole flipping off the crowd incident, all the attitude problems.
Which I just learned, by the way, was at a school night.
Yeah, that was not
that's hilarious to me.
Not a good look for Kevin Fiala.
Hilarious.
But yeah, I mean, I'd give his a grade for him. I'd give him a solid B-. You know, he had a goal and an assist. He had a +2 rating. I think the big thing is one of his points came on the power play. They're trusting. They know that he's still a work in progress, but they're trusting him on the power play.
They know it's an asset of his, right? Like, his asset is his shot. So if they can put him on the power play and they can use him that way, that's setting a guy up for success is what that is.
The final thing I want to talk about, because Martel is giving me the evil eye over here.
I haven't even looked at you.
There's three prospects that are performing at a nearly point-per-game clip. Joachim Kondalik, he's got 14 points in 17 games. Rem Pitlick, who's got 14 points in 15 games. Dante Faber, who's got 13 points in 15 games as well.
All college players, by the way.
All college players, yes. Kondalik plays at UConn with Vomachka. Like you said, they're not very good, but if there's a bright spot for UConn, it is Kondalik.
Oh, sure.
I mean, he's got 13 assists. You'd like to see him score, you know, a few more goals and stuff, but, I mean, he's one of those big-bodied players.
Look, I got nothing against a guy who wants to be Adam Oates in his career. If he can throw up 80 assists and 10 goals, I'm all right with that at the NHL level.
I mean, he's a big body player, which I think it kind of shows after the Winnipeg series and the playoffs that's they need someone like that, someone with a big body to match up with the Bufflins and the Myers of the world. Rem Pitlick is a guy you and Justin saw up in Minnesota. He's one of those prospects that doesn't get a lot of, kind of like Thomas Novak, that doesn't get a lot of attention, but if you watch them play, they're really good. They catch your eye if you're actually watching them. 14 points in 15 games, he's developing right where they want him to be too.
And yeah, so he is their Minnesota's leading scorer right now, as Kondalik is UConn's leading scorer. So again, you've got some potential there, and those are good things to see, obviously, but they're not overly offensive teams, which can be taken two ways. One, you can either take that as, well, they're making things happen. They're making the most of their opportunities. Or you can take it the other way, which is that they're kind of being held back because their team isn't successful. So for me, I like to see where Kondalik and Pitlick end up eventually. But I think we're several years away from even them scratching the NHL surface at all.
And you look at Dante Fabro. He's someone his freshman year at BU, everyone was worried because he wasn't putting up points, he wasn't scoring goals, which he's a defenseman, that shouldn't be too surprising. But
it's very hard, by the way, if you're an NCAA player, a freshman player, they're very, very difficult to find ice time at the NCAA level.
Plus, playing in a conference like Hockey East.
Not exactly against, a slouch.
Yeah, playing against all the teams that Boston University plays against. I mean, right, you look at him right now, he's got 3 goals, he's got 10 assists.
Also leading his team, by the way, yeah. So there's something in common with all 3 of these guys.
He's right on track of where he was last year, probably on pace to pass it. I think he had 29 points last year. But if you look at him, he's co-captain of BU. They have a legit shot at a national championship. He's someone people were kind of concerned of when he didn't sign with the Predators, you know, during training camp.
It's all because of the Jimmy Vesey thing. If that had never happened, nobody would be worried about it.
But just looking at Fabro, I mean, we touched on it earlier. Him and Tolvin are really the only legit prospects that this team has. I mean, Pettersson can get up there eventually, but he's developing offensively. Defensively, if you watch him, he's taken on the top-line players for their teams. He's leading BU in scoring right now, too. He's becoming the defenseman that David Poile envisioned when they drafted him.
Yeah, I have a tough read on him because every time I watch him play, he doesn't impress me. Now, there's context to that. He doesn't impress me in the sense that I expect more, right? So based on his draft position, based on everything I've been told from the organization about him, about his potential, about all the hype, I expect to see more, and I don't. That doesn't mean he's not a good prospect. I'm a big fan of his. I just don't. I guess my expectations have been set up to fail, I suppose. So for me, when I watch him play, I'm thinking, yeah, he's a nice player, But it's not like Ellie Tolvanen, where I can see the brilliance. I can see the how he's special. Every single time I see him play, even if he makes a mistake, I can see, oh, he was trying to do this. Or, oh, I can't believe he had the balls to do that. Or whatever it is. And so Favreau, for me, either I'm missing something, or I'm picking the wrong nights to watch him, or whatever. But I just need to see more dominance.
Do you think that's part of being spoiled as watching the Predators, being spoiled with prospects like Shea Weber and Ryan Suter and Roman Josi and then Sam Girard?
Possibly, but I would like to think that I separate that from when I watch different players play, especially at their different levels, right? Like, I understand he's a college player. I understand that he was a freshman. So I understand all that. And I also understand, likewise, that he is a point per game player. Sorry, he's leading the BU in scoring. So that's a, you know, a feather in his cap. But just for me, I just want to see more. I was led to believe by everything I've heard, even before the draft, at the draft, and after the draft, that he was going to be a special player. And I have yet to see that. I'm not saying he's not an NHL player eventually. I'm just saying I don't see the specialness of it all.
And we'll kind of wrap up with this. This time next year, do you think Dante Favreau is a member of the Predators, or do you think he's a trade chip for another forward?
Both. I think he's... let me rephrase that. I think he should be a major trade chip at this year's deadline, because one, it would relieve them of the Jimmy Vesey headache, PR issue that's going to happen. Two, again, I'm not sold on him, right? As a blue chip prospect, so that obviously goes to. But if others are, then by all means, strike while the iron's hot. But I also think that he would sign with the team. I think he will sign with the Preds once his college is over. You got to remember, this is a guy that was recruited out of the Penticton V's of the BCHL, and he would not accept anything other than going to college. He wanted to go to college. He really wanted to go to college. That was the main goal of his. So, Boston University, here he is. Why is anybody surprised at all, knowing that he doesn't want to finish his career, especially when he has a chance to win a national championship? Why would you not want to do that? So for me, all this just noise about Jimmy Vesey and will he sign and all that, to me, yeah, of course, that's a possibility. It's a possibility with any college player. It's a possibility with Condon, for that matter.
Yeah.
But it's just not, it's not likely for me. I understand that he wants to go to college, he wants to finish his career in college, and he wants to win a national championship. The only way to do all of those things is to not sign a pro contract. Therefore, I have no problem with it.
I mean, if you look at him, he's got a chance to captain back-to-back national championship-winning teams this year in his senior year next year.
Yes, absolutely he does.
Not to mention he's got sisters that go to school in Nashville. So it's like, it's not like he's looking to get out of Nashville. I think if he doesn't sign here, it would be because he knows that the top four is set for the foreseeable future, and he doesn't want to develop on the third pairing. He wants to go somewhere else and develop on one of the top two pairings for the defenseman.
Then that would even fuel my earlier take of then you trade him while you can. Because even if they do sign him, if his attitude, and I'm not saying it is, but if his attitude is, no, if the top four is not available, I'm not going to sign with you guys, you don't want him anyway. So for me, this is all lining up to be either a trade piece or, you know, a sign and just make him a project in the system.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeremy, for joining us here. Martel's dropping F-bombs to the right of me, telling me to wrap it up. So I guess we'll...
You're ruining my image.
We'll go ahead and do that.
Oh, please.
But yeah, this was our first episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. This is Jeremy K. Gover with the National Predators Radio Network. I'm Michael Gallagher. Follow us on Twitter @GoverTime, @MPatrickG5, and @PunkyBoxRadio.